that Google or blog on. Katie is, I haven't seen her this time, but she's a beautiful child. So you won't be going by to her, but she'll just be going to let me talk.
I guess probably not, but I'll just go in the department. Unless you have something you want me to take
not
over
all.
To. I could do that if you want.
I'll do
it's not inconvenient, I mean, I'll be happy to if you want.
Well, I know it's I didn't realize it was easier tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what you drink, Preston.
Oh, anything, except I don't usually drink milk because it's, it's nature's perfect food, but I don't need nature's perfect food. Water is what I need. Water
what?
Is actually the thing I usually drink.
Is that right?
What do you, you don't, do you eat at home at all out there?
Always. I almost never eat out. Once or twice a week I'll get tired and won't feel like cooking, and maybe I'll go, there's a real good fish place where you can get fish to take out,
yeah.
And I'll sometimes go to do that. Or I'll sometimes go eat with a friend, you know. He might invite me over, or maybe I'll invite him over, or something like that.
Yeah.
But even for lunch, I nearly always come home. Because I just feel that it's better for me to do that. And it's not just that it's cheaper. But you know, you can come home and you can eat a couple oranges and some fruit and have a piece of meat or something, you know, like a piece of ham or a piece of turkey or something. And that's a much better lunch than going out and having one of those,
blue plates.
Hamburgers or, you know,
hamburgers.
Steak or whatever it is you get, or spaghetti. It's just, the only thing we sometimes do is we go to a Mexican place, because Mexican food is real light, you know. You get this real thin little corn wafer, and you have some lettuce chopped up on it, and maybe a little bit of chili, and you know, a few beans or something, a tiny bit of meat, and a lot of cheese and orange shreddings, and it's, you know, 75 cents it costs, and it's a light sort of thing to have for lunch. It's real good. They call it a tostada, a toasted.
Oh.
And I quite often, if I go out for lunch, we'll go have something like that. But,
and those places, you can find them?
Right down the avenue. There are two good Mexican places, and both of them are very reasonable and have real good food. Always eat for under $1, you know. Yeah, Mexican food is like that. Well, of course, the Mexicans don't do it that way. They'd go in and they'd order a tostada and a quesadilla and a chalupa, you know, four or five of these things, and they'd run up to about $1.50 to $2. But we would just go and we'd just get the one thing, you know,
yeah.
Which is really more like a snack. But it's enough for lunch.
And you don't eat breakfast?
I usually don't. And, it's just that when I wake up in the morning, I'm not usually hungry. And my doctor told me, he said, you know, if you have a little bit of a problem with your weight and want to cut down on your eating, there's no reason in the world to get up and tank up on a great big breakfast if you really don't want it.
Yeah.
He didn't believe in the theory that, you know, you should always have a good breakfast, that makes a perfect day. The fact of the matter is that most of the world does not like to fill its stomach right after it gets up. I mean, the Greeks never eat any breakfast. Maybe just a cup of coffee or a glass of water, or maybe a piece of bread they would eat for energy. But they don't eat breakfast, I mean, the way we do. And even the French, you know, they have a couple of rolls and a glass of milk or something. They don't,
you know,
they don't have eggs and bacon and the whole works that we
eat. I lived
up on.
In China for 2 years and I have no idea what they eat for breakfast.
I don't know either. I never knew. They may not eat anything. If they get up real early, chances are they don't eat anything. You know, the Greeks do. They get up even before the sun is up. Even in the summer, they'll be up before the sun is up. And they'll go right out to pick the grapes or whatever it is before the heat of the day. And they'll work really hard until about 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then they'll come home and they'll have what they call a colazo, which is just from colazione. And it's just a breakfast. Or is it, what it is sort of like a coffee break. But they'll come home, they'll have a cup of coffee and maybe two or three rolls or pieces of bread or something.
You mean that's all?
That's all, even after all that work. And then they'll go maybe and do some more work for a couple hours. And then they'll come home at 2:30 in the afternoon, and then they'll have a meal that would kill one of us. They'll eat, and then they go off and sleep after that.
For a bit.
That's when they get the real rest. About 3 to 6 in the afternoon. Then at 6 they get up and they go off shopping. And then they eat again about 10:30 or 11.
Big.
Big. Not as big as at noon, but big. And then at about, oh, maybe 3 o'clock at night, they go to bed. But they get right up at 6. So they have a lot of people in that country with bloodshot eyes. But they seem energetic enough. You'd never know they got any, they don't get much sleep.
You know, one of the revelations to me, and that just not long ago, I've heard people say that the life used to be so hard, living on the farm and doing hard work. They set their pace. They didn't do any great lifting unless they just wanted to. You could kill yourself. But by and large, it was light work.
Mm-hmm.
And I never realized that.
And there were seasons of the year when there was very little to do.
Nothing
except
to do.
Go square dance.
Just keep the wood on the fire. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what he's the end of the family. He says, stay out of the lounge in the winter months. Evil gossip in the room.
But they are ordinarily up early. They don't, now the ones who work in the office don't get up early.
No, but then they don't go to bed early either. Farmers, I lived with a farmer my sophomore year at Oberlin. I rented a room in a house. He was up every morning at 5:30. And actually, I got up pretty early in those days. I got up before 7 even. But he'd long be gone by then in his car. He had a farm out in the country about 10 miles out of town. And he'd come back at 6:30 every night. He would already have had his supper when he came back. He'd go right upstairs, undress, and go to bed. Immediately to bed. He was asleep by 7 o'clock.
So you didn't see much of him.
No, he didn't want to see much of us. He didn't care for students. He was a strange man. He was the one that had a stroke about 3 months after we moved in, and we had to help him down the stairs. It was kind of a strange experience for him. He'd always been a very hard, harsh man. He'd always done this every day of his life except Sunday. He always got up at 5:30, drove out to the farm and worked, and came back. He hardly ever spoke to his wife. He was really very... very cold for her. And then for the first time in his life, at about the age of 80, he had this stroke, and all of a sudden he was sick and incapacitated. He had never had that experience before.
Yeah.
He was having to ask people to help him that he had never shown any sign of even decent liking for. And it sort of broke him up.
You know, a man, really, it works out better if he... is out of commission every now and then.
So he knows what.
Oh,
what,
man.
You're quite right.
I've seen these brainy people, middle aged and past, have never had any illness themselves or any experience with illness, and it scares them to death.
Mm-hmm. Really does.
Just healthy all the time. That's just not natural state, is it?
No, it isn't.
Since at least Hector or some of those people.
No.
Now there's my thing, and you know where it was?
Where?
In my briefcase. I've got a little tool chest in there. I've got a little cord container with a little screwdriver in it and a little this, that, and the other. And that, you see, I'm way... I have so many headquarters, I have to have something with me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only screwdriver we got, and I had it in my briefcase and didn't know it. I've even got that, you see that thing, that corkscrew thing, it gets out of, sticks out in it, it can harm you. I remember in Sion, after the war was over, I went up, I rode in a B-25, and that's the only, I went around, that's the, and I got acquainted there with what they call the modern Chinese breakfast. They'd go to these places and it has steaming soybean milk, and it wasn't, they didn't drink just milk, it was, used it in porridge or something like that,
mm-hmm.
See. But that was a modern one, so not many people did it. It was just that.
Sort of like oatmeal, but made out of soybeans. sort of a porridge at that time.
Yeah. And of course, soybeans are so wholesome.
Yeah, they are. They taste horrible.
In any shape. But you know, I've never been around the Chinese places for breakfast. The only meal I know is, well, they have light meals, but the only meal I know is the one where you have a dish for every person there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's inhumane, you know. I've eaten many of those, but still I don't know how they eat. I don't know how much they eat. All I know, I've just seen them, you see, in the stores. They live there. They don't knock off for dinner. They'll just bring the stuff in and have the little burners, and they cook rice, you know, on that little burner, and have vegetables. And all I'll see is that bowl of rice, and it's working fast like that. And all it makes me think is, you got a one bowl man, a two bowl man, a three bowl man. Some of them just keep stuffing it, you see, just like a cow eats hay. I can't get down one bowl. Not a real bowl of rice.
No. Even when I go with my rice addict friends to a natural food restaurant where they have the brown rice, he always has to eat most of the rice. I just can't eat too much. A little bit's good, but a lot of it I'm just...
Hey, here I am sitting over here talking to Leslie. I don't know anything to talk to Leslie about. You're the talker.
Well, Leslie and I have talked about a lot of it.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you go ahead and talk about the next man.
We're ready now
caught on Christmas, Leslie.
What?
I have retired mostly from all these occasions, you know.
I go through the stores muttering, I wish Christmas would come never again. I hate Christmas, and the people all turn their heads. I've passed the point of caring what they think. It's a nightmare. In Gainesville, that mall. Everybody in town is at one place. You know, the other day, the day before Christmas, I needed a curtain rod, and I just drove right downtown and parked at my Woolworth and went inside and got my curtain rod, didn't wait in line, came out and went back home. That's the answer. If you can find something that you can buy downtown, it's much quicker to go all the way down there and get it and come back than it is to go out to the mall and wait for hours. You can't even get into the parking lot, and once you get in the parking lot, you're caught in these little narrow alleys, and you just can't move. Your car just sits there. You can't even leave if you want to. You want to go and you come back at another time where it's not so crowded. You can't get out.
Yeah.
It's just, really nervous.
You get caught on a left turn, you're in bad shape.
You really are. I mean, it's just insane to put every store, practically, in that one tiny little place.
Isn't that phenomenal?
Everybody will congregate there. You know, if you don't see them in the mall, they're not in town.
Yeah.
So I know I don't have very many friends left here, because if I haven't seen them in the mall, they're just not here.
Now let's see, some of the stores, now, they buy at, let me see, when you shop for your groceries, say what's the one cookie booth?
Fancy Pride.
That's
Fancy
so
Pride.
Crowded now. You almost have to have armor on to go through it.
Oh.
I think the students discovered that one because it doesn't wrap the fruit and vegetables. That's just out. You can't go anywhere near that anymore, can you? Last time I was in there, it was so noisy I couldn't stand it. I had to go out and sit in the car. Rosemary got whatever it was. Terrible.
Yeah.
And of course, in Berkeley, all stores are like that, all the time.
All the time.
Oh, yeah. I can get behind a woman, and I had one woman that was behind me in the grocery store line, and she started humming. And even though she was a perfect stranger, I just told her to stop. I didn't see why anybody would hum when they had 15 people ahead of them in line, and I just wasn't going to put up with it. The least she could do would be to scowl. It's just terrible. I feel that someday I'm going to die waiting in that food store line. You know what I mean? I just feel that that's where my end's going to come. It's because I don't plan ahead, you see, and go once a week. Everything comes from shelf to mouth. But every day I'll realize there's some basic thing that I need, like toilet tissue or a Kleenex or eggs or something that you have to have
in the house.
Well,
that doesn't sound like you. I thought you were better.
Not at all. Not at all. I'm completely disorganized on anything like that. It's just awful. It's unbelievable.
You know, I'll tell you, fate buys one of the things. And like I eat oats. Well, you know, if you eat oats every day, a great big box doesn't last long. And it's a mischief, you see, when you have a habit and don't have any oats, you run out. Well, you got to run clear down to Macintosh to get a few little oats. So I get three or four at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good
but
idea.
Now you don't eat anything that consistently.
No.
Sugar.
Sugar, yes, but I try, you know,
to
avoid sugar and coffee. I do get the great big one, and it lasts 3 months. But, you know, I have to get it early in the month, or I won't have the money to pay for it. If it runs the groceries up $4 or $5, then you can just forget that. I won't have it.
How big do you get it?
Well, I just get that big size like that, you know.
How many pounds?
I think it's 3 pounds in that can, isn't it? No, it's 5 pounds in that big coffee can.
5 pounds of coffee, and it lasts you 3 months.
Oh, yes. I have a little percolator that perks 3 cups, and I'll maybe have coffee 5 or 6 times a week. I don't have it every day, but I have it more often than every other day.
Yeah.
So I have it maybe 4 days a week. So it'll last about 3 months. Unless I have people over.
You don't have tea.
Oh, yes, I make tea all the time. I like tea. I make the jasmine tea and the other kind. I have the orange pekoe. I have some of that. I get that in a little can.
You
use the leaves.
Have coffee at breakfast?
Well, no, sometimes I have tea. I'll usually have coffee one day and then maybe tea the next.
At breakfast.
But then I won't eat anything with it. I'll just have the liquid very often. Or maybe I'll have an orange or something. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
And I'm not usually hungry in the morning.
And fruit's plentiful.
Yes. California oranges are not as good as our oranges when our oranges are at their best.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But they do have a more stable crop of oranges all the year round. In other words, they're never terribly good, but they're not bad at any time of the year. You can always get fairly decent oranges at a low price. Whereas here you would...
Do they ask for blessing in Greece?
They do, in all Orthodox homes, before they eat, make the sign of the cross, and if there is an outsider present, as I would be, then they also welcome that person by saying, Kalos Arisate, which just means welcome to our house. They'll usually say Kalos Arisate, and then they'll say whatever it is they say when they make the sign of the cross, the Christos Stavros or something like that, and then we touch the 4 places. But I've never known a Greek family to offer a grace such as we do, where you would recite a short prayer. I've never known that.
Yeah.
They just normally cross themselves.
I started with myself.
Maybe so. I could be.
I'm not going back to the Scots.
Mm-hmm.
After Reformation, I think they were. Milton loved to, he thought of the next world, where he would sing those hymns.
He thought it would be better than this one.
those little hymns off the Thursday hymns, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But he had that rather light touch in listeners.
Hmm.
It is hard to project into those to see what other people have seen in these things. And generally, we have such a heavy touch.
Mm.
But you haven't had any he hasn't been exposed to religious background like Linton.
No, you haven't had any lessons.
No, not too much. We were always we always went to Sunday school though, through the entire period that I was here as a boy. Not every Sunday. I don't think our parents insisted on it every Sunday, but I believe that the minimum was every other Sunday. You couldn't go less often than that. And I went through a period when I was going every Sunday just voluntarily. For several years, as a matter of fact.
The minister?
No, we were Presbyterians. No Methodists, so.
But you never read a little weekly Presbyterian paper and things like that.
No. We never had a... we did say grace at home, I can remember, when we were children, but we never had a deep-seated religious base in our own family. My father's family has a lot of religious people in it. Some of them I would describe as fanatics. And also some clergymen in both sides of the family, actually, had...
Oh.
Clergyman. My great-great-grandfather was a clergyman in Georgia on Mother's side. But then they had a dispute in the church as to whether or not they should pay the minister or not. He didn't want the minister to be paid. They decided they wanted him paid, so he quit and emigrated to Florida and started a newspaper in Cocoa, which is where Mother's family was ever since.
So they felt strongly about it.
I think he was robbing the blind with, you know, you can get a lot more food out of people than you can out of a salary sometimes. And if you read Kazantzakis, you realize that it's not always to the minister's advantage to receive just a monetary salary. That's what I think, because I know members of that family. But the family story is that he really did feel that it should be something that was done voluntarily without pay. That's why he resigned.
If you knew Kazantzak, what's that?
Kazantzakis, the Greek novelist and poet, who has some very interesting stories about villages in Greece and Turkey and how the local priest was essentially extorting large amounts from them.
But you don't know anything about that.
Nope.
Oh, you
not
know
at first hand.
About tombstones.
That's right.
And the academic world.
Well, sometimes I think there's not much difference in a graveyard.
Well.
But I think to have in the children a really deeply instilled religious attitude, the parents have to do more than participate in the church and insist that the child participates. They have to be themselves deeply religious, and my parents are not. Particularly my father, he was somewhat, I will say this, as long as we were small children, there was never, he never intimated around us that he was the least bit cynical or not just a serious believer, but I think basically he was somewhat, well, maybe cynical is not the right word, but, you know, something of a free thinker as far as
well,
the doctrines
tell you.
Of the church are concerned.
Let me tell you, Roger. It got to the point where there's nobody to talk to about those things. You, I can't think things out of myself. I have to work it out with somebody. And there's one little point that's been in my mind, you see, about religious subjects. I'm just at a loss now. I don't believe what I know, and I don't know anymore. One little point that has just been in my mind, and I think of it ever so often, is God is an assumption that's much too heavy for the use that's made of it.
Mm-hmm.
That is, so much of the things, based on that assumption, you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't work that out by myself. And nobody, you know, the nicest person I had was 2 or 3 years ago, this little girl who was educated as a missionary in a missionary family in New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
She was American, but she had Dutch forebears. And the only form of schooling she had, she just read a little, was correspondence courses. And she said before she got the answer to the first lesson she'd sent off, she'd finished all the others and sent them off. So, you see. And she had marvelous skills. And her laughter was just lyric.
It was.
She sat right where you were sitting. Yes. And the only thing I could figure why she'd been spared of the American school system. Public school system or whatever it is.
You probably have to go to New Guinea then.
But she would run out, you see, at the end of it. She was the last one. When they ran the Dutch out.
Oh, that was charming.
But I saw some of the missionary life over there, and it was a good life. They had a compound and were servants,
mm-hmm.
and they spoke
mm-hmm.
the language.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Sounds like the American school.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Mm?
It sounds like the American school in Athens with all the servants. And
oh, it was fine, and the people I knew as missionaries were high class.
Mm-hmm.
They were just common people, but you see, they didn't have to put up with this awful sort of. How would you thrive in one of these little Presbyterian Methodist churches if you were
mm-hmm.
really tied down there?
Yes, I one wonders.
They don't know how stuffy they are. And they had the marvelous old 2-hour sermon still in China when I was there. They said that they just throw them out. They just gave a little 15-minute sermon. They came to hear the word.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
2 hours, not an hour.
Mm-hmm.
2 hours. And I don't ask me how they did it. I used to go around and visit the village elders all over the parts of China where I was. We'd drink tea together. They didn't understand a word I said, and I didn't understand what he said. And the little interpreters, they didn't know much more.
Well, those people that go for the 2-hour sermons, they're probably people that never read very much, aren't they?
Or they couldn't read.
No, they couldn't read. So it makes sense, you know, in a way, that they would want this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the Puritans were probably like,
well, you see, if I could do it all over again, I'd find out some of those things. But then, you see, I lived above it.
Mm-hmm.
All I heard was that 2-hour sermon, and it struck me as funny. I should have gone right in there and listened to it, you see?
See what it was like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Man sure can be ignorant.
I bet China looks different now, doesn't it? When they're doing. The people that own the house where I'm staying now, the apartment, are very interested in Oriental and Asian art and society. They're also quite wealthy. And they're going around the world on a Chinese ship, a Taiwanese ship.
Oh.
But they might go off in Hong Kong and go into the interior of China if it's open land.
Yeah, I'd love to see some of the old Chinese friends. Yeah, I've been cut off from them.
Mm-hmm.
Almost since I left over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice piece of meat, Faye. Where'd you find it?
Down at Bill's. You don't get
it. I don't get this. Tell him.
Yes, it just sticks.
You go to the grocery and you, what do? Get there at the wrong time?
You see, other people have wives that they can send to the store at 9.
Yeah.
But I have to go at 5 in the afternoon, the time when people are there. It's always the same. Well, you know, there are 130,000 people living in Berkeley now. Just Berkeley itself. And that's really a lot of people. When you consider the sheer size of the town, it's not very large. In land area, it's not any bigger than Gainesville, I don't think. Not much bigger. And there are 131,000 people living there. That's a lot.
Good Lord.
And it's just continuous with Oakland and Richmond and all these other communities that make up to some 3 million population that live around the bay. And there are only about 10 grocery stores for those 130,000 people. And they're all there at exactly the same time that I am. I mean, you just can't, you can't go there, I think, when they're not packed.
Well, no wonder you asked the woman to quit humming.
I was so angry that day. And then you come out and realize you've forgotten the thing you went in and did. I should do everything very scientifically, you know, make a list and get things at the start of the month and do it all like that, but I just don't.
You don't have a shelf list.
Mm-hmm. That's right, I have an inventory.
Yeah.
But you know, did Les tell you what he's been doing this week?
Nope.
Painted the whole interior of
the
living room.
Yeah.
Put up some new curtains.
That might be nice to have a little fresh paint around. Hmm. That would be nice.
So you see, you can. But you're not much of a carpenter.
No, no. A limb fell on a garage roof and made a hole in it. And I think I could repair it, but there just isn't time. I would repair it if there were time, because the insurance would still give us the some $130 that will probably be the bill. You know, you can do that. You get the estimates, and they give you the money, and then you can just go repair it yourself and keep the money. And I'd like to get the money, but I just don't have time. It has a big gaping hole about that big around. It might be dangerous for a person who didn't know what he was doing. Go up and try to fix it, but it looks like it would be very easy to saw off the boards and replace them and put tar paper on top of it. That's all the rest of the roof has over it.
Yeah.
But I just can't get it in this time. It's not possible. But Mother had to have all the trees. You know, that yard of ours has those enormous trees in it. We had to have all of those trimmed because we just thought, you know, suppose that limb had fallen on the house. He would have killed anyone underneath it, quite apart from the damage. So we had to have all of those trimmed so that there are no limbs now of any substantial size that hang over the house. Oh, $300, that's all it was. I thought it was a bargain. Then we had to have, you see, the washing machine had to be put inside the house because of the damage to the garage. It was always out there. And Mother decided she wanted to put it in anyway. And we had to have all the plumbing redone down underneath the house because we had clay pipes. And at regular intervals, we had to have this thing called a Roto-Rooter, which is a little thing that they put down the pipe that just grinds up the roots that have grown through it. And you have to have it done every so many months, or your plumbing will give you difficulty. But we've had all those pipes now taken out and replaced with metal pipes, which presumably the roots cannot puncture. And Mother combined that with moving all the piping for the washing machine inside the house. So that was another bargain, $497. There's just no end to it. That house needs $2,000 worth of work done on it, really. And the painting wasn't a drop in the bucket. And if you don't keep a house up, it'll fall down on your head. It will, and then you really have a lot of money to spend. So it's pretty tough. I can't expect to get much help from my brother because he's married and has all the expenses of setting up his own household. So.
What's your brother like, Leslie?
He's very, very quiet. He has the taste of,
it was cookies,
of, my, of my father. But
I'm afraid Leslie go. I won't even have a cookie. I don't want him to go.
No.
Well, you've got something there. You got something special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. You notice the air, the night air is coming in?
Tiny bit, but
doesn't feel bad, does it?
No.
Right.
It's always cold out there, you know, when it's a good start. So I'm used to it. But if you're gonna be cold, we better close it.
I'm not cool.
He likes hunting and fishing and things like that.
I mean,
that.
What is he like himself? What, you know, he's so different from you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's very, very introverted, like mother, I think. Extremely shy.
Well, I thought he
close
was
mouth.
A football player.
He was. He was good at athletics and things like that. He was also good at other things. He was always an A student, and he was brilliant in science, and played the trumpet quite well for a couple of years there.
Gee whiz. Gee whiz. I don't see how anybody like that can be. Keeps himself.
He pretty much did. He had very few friends and was always very shy, and he only met this girl that he's married about, oh, a year ago, I guess. And I think she was the first girl he ever had. He's about 27.
Oh, really?
And they got married in November. They were down, they came up to visit us last week. They couldn't be here Christmas, but they were here 2 days right after I got here. She's very nice. Her mother is German from Bamberg.
Well, you didn't know that, did you?
No, sir. That is that completely. If I ever thought about your brother, I thought about him as being, you know, just a very popular football player,
yeah,
and an extrovert.
Yeah.
And Rosemary, too.
Rosemary is. Rosemary is very extroverted, much more so than any of us, I think. She's the one who's most like Daddy in personality.
Oh, he was that way, too?
Yeah, oh, yes. He was very, very extroverted, I think.
This could be,
Oh, no, I think I was much more, you know, at ease in groups and things like that than James ever was. Though I'm not quite as good at it as Rosemary is, but...
She just actually likes it?
I think so, yes. She's gregarious.
And your daddy was like that?
I think so. Perhaps until the last 3 or 4 years when he got, I think, somewhat tired. He didn't ever know that he had anything the matter with him, and I'm not sure he knew himself, but he did get somewhat tired about 2 or 3 years of last 2 or 3 years of his life.
Yeah, you look back now and see.
Yes.
Now, this could be a giant firecracker.
A rolling candle, yeah.
Is this a gift you're unrolling,
yeah,
or is
it
just a
package
of wrapping paper? What is that? Are you sure it isn't just a package? Oh, no, there's something in it.
Something there?
Yeah. Gosh. It looks like a map.
Map of what? What it would be a map of?
Well, it is a map of Florida, isn't it?
You don't tell me.
That's what it
no,
is.
No, you don't want Florida. You just want Lexington County.
Well, that's...
Huh?
Maybe that's a close...
Isn't the whole thing?
It's Florida.
Yeah,
I'm
but
afraid.
I thought she was trying to find Alachua County.
Maybe there's another one in there, but it may be that they didn't.
Or maybe that is a. Maybe that's got Alachua in it.
That's got Alachua in it, yeah.
I mean, real. In real detail.
Hmm.
Well, could be.
Right,
anyway. You tell. You see, the thing is, if people give you things and you don't you really have something else, you give them back to them. Tell them to spot them.
Yeah. Is that what you're going to do?
I don't need about Florida, but I'd love to have a deep
mouth. Well, they probably did the best they could. Gosh. I don't think I'd give you anything.
You might have to do it all over again.
Right. I'll just give you a gift certificate to the map store.
Goodness, these are special ones.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
All look very special.
Look at that.
All sorts of goodies in here.
Oh, my. Think of that. Think of that.
That's delicious.
Mm-hmm. Is this that famous song?
Yes, this is.
Well, why not get so much, Faye? That's rich.
Did I give it too much?
No. Save it.
Oh, I think you can have it.
This is nog.
I remember one Christmas Eve, Lester was here and read from the Odyssey to us.
Yeah.
That was a delight.
That was.
That was our.
I think you ought to bring it with you.
I think you should never come unless you bring the. Something to read to us.
Okay.
Let me tell you something, Lester. I've learned how to read and interpret it so I can hear it. I can almost interpret it with my voice. I mean, I've done so much of it. Because I don't... one thing... you don't let it speak for itself. You've got to give a little cue.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to make it elaborate. You know, if you make it long mechanical, it kills it. But they're light touch is all it takes. Well, and then you can go ahead, and you got something to follow. You see,
mm-hmm.
Now all this poetry reading they do, it just kills me. Stuff I couldn't even make out if I had had it before me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people won't tell you what they've been reading. They say, that's a good book, all right. Well, if they read it, it's a good book, they'll tell you about it. Jack Long. We used to work together for 10 years up there. He was reading Gibbon up in the mountains. Summer, one winter, and I said, Jack, send me a few little insights into Gibbon. See, I've never even opened it. Woody? Write the most inconsequential stuff down here. Well, I'm like Milton in those little Presbyterian hymns. When I get to heaven, I'd like to have a very light lecture with light touch, you see. I love information. I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he knows what he's reading. I used to make statements about Shakespeare. And I'd look at him. He'd pick it up, you know, in a very easy way and sort of straighten out. Down here, I never had anybody I could work with amongst your brainy people. I don't know what to do down here. It's like the frontier.
Well, maybe it's fun. Or something.
Well, Florida is a frontier.
Well, you know, all these different worlds, you see, home is another world, it's not another subject, it's another world. I can't get into it. If I get into it, everything I see is wrong. I went over to Mid-Guffer's church, I went to Townsend Church.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate more. Baptist Church over. He was on homecoming. they had a little business transaction. This big fella, big broad fella, dark clothes on, his floppy eared, you know, and he'd do the talking, and then he'd pray. And I said to Miss Guthrie when we got home, I said, "You're certainly unfortunate to have a deacon like that." Why, she said, "Yes, sir, he makes them the best moonshine in this old world."
You didn't say it's good quality. Not apparent.
I always see that's the way I read Shakespeare.
There's a one.
What?
Water.
Oh, no, thank you. This is fine.
Oh, that was the gay time, though.
Yeah, so that was about as nice a time we had, right?
No. As what Leslie should do is just be on your, be a member of your staff for summer, go around the countryside with us.
Yeah.
And then he can go back to Greece and see what's over there.
Well,
let me tell you,
they've worn me down pretty much. There are times when I think the way they do.
Let me tell you what. You know, when I came down here, I haven't been outside of Lassie County since I've been here, see? And I find some of the most extraordinary things. But all my friends, you see, and people I know, if they want to see Florida, they'll go to Cypress Garden.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know one thing about Lassie County. Well, it's just like that, see? They'll go to Greece to study people over there that don't know any more than I do. And this part of the country I know. Mm-hmm. I don't live at all in, I know the people she wrote about. They won't stop here. I know nobody lives here, and Huff himself does. In some ways.
Oh, just because you've lived at a place all your life doesn't mean you know anything about it.
Oh, no. No, that's true. It's amazing how some people know absolutely
may never
nothing.
Have looked at all.
Never.
It is amazing.
They don't necessarily have to be, you know, completely dumb people or dull or stupid either. I mean,
oh, no.
They can have considerable talent sometimes and still be that way.
No, the more I see of it, the less. You see, there's something that is simply irresistible. You think because you walk along the street with somebody, you're living the same world with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know a thing about them. Or if you brought up together, you say, "Well, yes, I brought up with them," and you don't know a thing about them.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you see, I left home when I was 15. Well, I'd go back there when I am. But see, I know those people in the whole countryside. I can see them now just as clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I never spoke to 10 of them all day. You see, I knew them through my folks.
Oh.
Knew them through my folks. That's all I knew. In those days, people talked a lot. I remember my mother, she'd go down and visit her family down there, Martin and all. And she'd come back, and I could see her and my grandmother standing over the kitchen stove, or wood stove. And they were perfectly unconscious of what was cooking on that stove. They just talk about cousin Morty and all of them, see? And all I saw was through their eyes, what, you know, just a little bit of that. I didn't understand their eyes too well. Just those almost shadows. Yeah.
the leisure we've lost, I guess. But going and talking with the neighbors or with the other people.
Or looking at anything.
Or looking at anything.
Anything. Mm-hmm. And that's what you were saying, you know, that you just, it wasn't worth it.
No, if you have to, I mean, I like to have my hour every day to go for my bicycle ride and, you know, have my 2 hours for the piano. And I don't like to come home so tired at night that I don't feel like doing anything except just going.
Do they work you?
They work you to death. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. The teaching load is very onerous now. It's, if you have a semester where you have two changes in the year, it's not so bad to do three courses at once. But when you have them two, two, and two, and they're all unrelated, it's just terrible. I mean, the term just gets started and then it's over. And every time it's over, you not only have all your exams to read and correct, and then so far I haven't compromised and started giving short exams yet. They'll know I do it if I do, because I always give such long ones. But you have all your recommendations to write, you have all your mimeograph junk that they turn out. I know the taxpayers' money is just spent by millions on turning out memos from somebody or other and surveys that you have to fill out and all kinds of junk. I just, you know. To say nothing of the fact that now I'm getting on quite a few committees, and I haven't exactly sought committee positions, but if they've been offered to me, I naturally haven't wanted to turn them down, because I just feel that if you turn them down, then the one that doesn't turn them down is going to be worse than you. You can bet your life on it. And if it's something important, like the graduate curriculum, or something that affects you pretty directly, like getting books for the library. I mean, you don't want to say, well, I'm too busy. I have my book.
Oh, that library committee, there's no end of that.
No end of that. Well, one of my colleagues is on that, and he's
I remember the first time I ever tried to spend $500 of the library's money. It just worked the tar out of me.
Did you ever get it?
Yes. I got so I could do it pretty well, but it's sure, even at the best, it's, what is backbreaking.
I found my dealings with librarians generally to be much slowed by a certain communications barrier which seems to spring up. But, oh, it's hard.
Well, they buy a whole series of things now, you see, and then they can go up to $10,000, $20,000.
They can't
do it with just individual books.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they were rare books.
They can buy all you wanted. They're $1 million a volume. Well, it's true. They have special funds. The wealthy alumni are encouraged by people to give their money to the library and to put strings on it for rare books. Because being a public university, they're not apt to spend money for rare books unless they're, you know, dealing with Florida history, or with us, it's with California history. So people like Mr. Hurst will give, you know, $100,000 to the library, and they'll put a string on it. This can only be used for rare books. That enables the library to build up its collection of rare books.
You haven't had to work like this before, have you?
No, I haven't. It was much easier at Cornell. There's no doubt about it. The teaching load was lighter. It was 3 and 2, which adds up to 5 instead of 6. And it was on the semester system, which meant that you only had 2 terms a year. The calendar wasn't quite as good as far as going to Greece was concerned, because it started fairly early in September. But as far as working you too hard, it was much, much kinder than the Berkeley calendar, really. And there wasn't, it was a small apartment and sort of easygoing, and we didn't have too much committees and all this kind of thing. We just did things as a department. There were only about 7 or 8 of us, so, you know, we could just decide things.
Well, what is the great advantage of Ben Drake?
Well, it's a better place academically. There are more students interested in the classics. I have real classes there. I mean, they may have 7 or 8 people in them, but at Cornell you'd have classes of only 2. Which is fine, but sometimes classes had to be canceled. There just weren't any students to take the courses. And at that time, I didn't think the future looked too bright. In fact, I thought at that time that probably the number of students in classics would be decreasing rather than increasing. I'm happy to say that this has not been the case in the past 2 years. They've sort of held their own. You see, my replacement there is a very close friend of mine, so I still know pretty well.
Actually, it looks to me like the great loss of your talents. You have to have somebody who can speak Greek. You ought to just talk about anything.
I don't know whether you're telling me I should go into comp lit or what.
I
would have been happier if I had chosen.
Just talk about Mitt Rawlings. It don't matter what, and you can bring in anything you want to. You bring in anything, Homer or any of it. Just stick it in as it suits you.
Be nice, I don't know. It might work for a while, but I sometimes think I might have been happier if I'd done English.
Well, I'm not talking about it. I'm not
Russian
talking about anything like that. I'm talking just about sitting right where you are, but off of something where you can talk at large.
Mm.
Yeah, you don't have to start all over again. It's just that diminished view you have of your department and your calling.
They don't narrow-minded.
They
have diminished.
They don't get anything out of you. You see, if you got
it. Speaking Greek.
They don't have any buckets to put it in, do they? That's the only advantage of being head of something. If you want to put in a course, you can. Well, it's getting so now that everything got to go through the committee. But
you must have put one in.
But you can get it through the committee. Yeah.
Well.
I put in something that pleased me. We had a place up there for 10 years, you see, and we didn't have any diminished view of it. I started out like that, but we took a right magnanimous view of it before it was all over. And we did things and it was lively. Yeah. For one thing, now here's one thing.
That's right. Go ahead.
One thing we did, we said. There for a long time, we were down in the basement of a dormitory, men's dormitory, because it was open down there, and there's a lot of extra room. And we had one big room down there, big enough for 500 people. We don't put them all 300, 200, I don't know. But anyhow, we had a class on one side, and on the other side, we had lounges, and we'd play records and things. And we didn't have many classes there. Every now and then, we'd have a class. But see, we'd be, the offices is over there too. And we're going back to the office and see somebody over there holding the class, we just sit down and see what they're talking about. Well, you know what? If you used to do that here, the professor would turn red in the face.
Mm-hmm. I think you were spied on him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he'd change his attitude. He'd say, well, now there's Professor Miles. I've got to brush up on this stuff.
Class is canceled.
Yes. I tried that on old Cox. What's his name? Ernest Cox. I practically brought up with him. He said, yes, come in anytime you want to. I passed that one day, the door was open. I sat down. Why, you know, he almost swallowed his own devil. visibly made a difference. So I didn't go anymore. It don't bother me, but nobody ever comes in mine.
That was a small department at Leslie, but that was marvelous.
Oh, yeah.
They just had everybody working, you know, if you want to talk Homer here, Well, you talk to me, you know, I mean, just free.
It doesn't matter, that's what I was like. And the only reason we left was that we got a scoundrel as president, and he threw us all out.
Well, that's good.
He was meaner than we were. Oh, he was a scoundrel. He looked just like this fellow on television. I can't look at him for thinking of that bastard up there. You know the one from Texas, Faye?
I can't tell you.
Oh, I wouldn't risk him. Oral Roberts.
Oral Roberts.
Oh, whenever he looked just like him. And Oral Roberts is a scoundrel from way back.
It is too bad, though, that you have this sort of attitude that you can't go. Well, sometimes people visit, you know, graduate.
You see, Leslie was down here. I could see go over there. I could let him send him over there, and they'd go to church, and she could sit him off on the deacon, see?
Yeah,
he could make it all right.
Sure. He'd get invited in.
And sit with him and talk.
Yeah.